Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 22nd, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, D.R. So, D.R., big doings on the international stage this past week, and it has to do with an idea or a concept of something that is a little bit different than what we usually talk about when we talk about carbon pollution. So we've talked on and on at great length about reducing the emission of carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels, right? Mm-hmm. But there, it turns out that Mother Nature has a much broader perspective, and there are lots of different kinds of gases that are also greenhouse gases. It's not just carbon dioxide. Turns out the carbon dioxide is a very important one, but there are other gases. They're sometimes called specialty gases, but in this particular instance, there's an interesting story around something called hydrofluorocarbons, which are greenhouse gases, and in fact, super greenhouse gases, much more effective than carbon dioxide. But it turns out that, relatively speaking, they're in small quantities. So even though they're in small quantities in the atmosphere, they're really potent. So with that as a sort of a preliminary discussion, DR, tell me, what happened this week that climate hawks ought to know about?
Well, about 170 countries worked out an agreement in Kigali, Rwanda, to essentially amend the 1987 Montreal Protocol, which phased out the use of the chlorofluorocarbons that were burning a hole in the ozone layer, and basically as a part of this amendment to the Montreal Protocol, they're going to phase out the CFCs, which, according to the UN Environment Program, quote, trap thousands of times more heat in the Earth's atmosphere than CO2. And of course, HFCs were phased in to offset the phasing out of CFCs, but from the moment they were phased in, it was recognized that these things basically trap heat. So there's been a push since that time, since the late 80s thereabouts, to try to phase these out. And then finally, after nearly, you know, a quarter century, we are finally beginning to finally beginning the process of phasing out HFCs.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting story. And so everyone of a certain age, and if you're not quite that age, I'll tell you the story, that in the 1980s, we discovered that something called chlorofluorocarbons were gases, and they were typically used in spray cans of hairspray and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And the chlorofluorocarbons were floating up into the atmosphere, and basically these chlorofluorocarbons were very effective at destroying ozone, which is way high up in the atmosphere, but protects us from ultraviolet. The Montreal Protocol was signed in the late 1980s and was essentially the first cap and trade system, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's touted as being like the most successful international treaty ever, full stop, right? Because of the market-based mechanism for getting rid of these chlorofluorocarbons. And of course, what it was is that countries were able to trade permission to put these things into their spray cans, their hairspray cans, right? And part of the provision in the Montreal Protocol, again signed in late 80s, said that if any substitute gases were found to have a bad effect, they could also be regulated under the Montreal Protocol. So that, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the legal basis by which the countries got together and said, well, the substitutes for the CFCs, which happen to be the HFCs, the hydrofluorocarbons, are even worse from a global warming perspective, but because of this clause in the agreement, we get to regulate them as well, right?
Yes.
Is that how you get this story?
That's my understanding as well.
And so these guys all got together, and they are now brokering a deal where they're going to have a cap and trade system for limiting the use of these things. So it's really, so just to bring all this sort of highfalutin talk of chemistry down to the real world, mostly what it addresses is air conditioning, right?
Mm-hmm. Air conditioning and refrigerators, according to the New York Times.
Which are two, in many parts of the world, fundamentals of modern life, right? Refrigeration mm-hmm. for your food and air conditioning for your house are driven by the fact that there are these HFCs in the piping, in the compressor that runs inside your refrigerator or runs inside of your air conditioner. But mm-hmm. when that stuff escapes, it's serious bad news for the climate, right?
Exactly.
And so I guess there's a fair amount of science in the background here in it, but one important word that you can you should note when you see articles about these hydrofluorocarbons is that they talk about carbon dioxide equivalent, mm-hmm. right? And so they say, oh, the Kigali Protocol, the Kigali Agreement will limit, will reduce 20 gazillion tons of carbon dioxide equivalent in the air over the next 50 years, right?
Yes, yes.
And what they've done is they've taken it, they do a calculation that tries to compare the global warming effect of this, the global warming potential of the HFC to carbon dioxide. And then that's how they figure out the equivalent amount of carbon dioxide you're taking out of the air by taking out these HFCs. I mean, it's this yes. funny little subtext. Have you seen that, D.R.?
Yes, there have been a number of great stories along that point. Secretary of State John Kerry noted that this agreement, if fully implemented, would reduce global temperatures by 0.5 degrees, which is important because we talk about how we have to avoid hitting 2 degrees Celsius, and we've already gone 1 degree. And there's concern that we might hit 1.5 degrees. So if we can avoid that 0.5, that's not a bad thing. And also, there was a great piece in the New York Times noting that part of the reason why this agreement was able to be hammered out is that the chemical industry, the international chemical industry, basically was on board and said, yes, we can go with this policy, and we can develop, and we have the ingenuity and we have the wisdom to develop different chemicals that will not pose as much of a global warming impact. So as the New York Times noted, you know, this is in contrast to the aggressive resistance by the fossil fuel industry to any effort to reduce carbon pollution. So it's interesting to see that the companies are specifically cited as Honeywell and a DuPont spinoff. They are basically on board and they're forward thinking, as opposed to other industries that are not so forward thinking.
Right. Well, I mean, we talked, I think it was a year ago now, that President Obama went to China and mm-hmm. spoke with the president of China, and the U.S. and China agreed to limit these specialty gases, these HFCs, right? Mm-hmm. And that it is that push and that leadership from our president in the United States that basically really got the ball rolling on having the entire world under the Montreal Protocol agree to do this. I mean, I think everybody talks about Obama's legacy, but I think he sees this as something that he's engaged with and he's done the right thing.
Definitely, it's definitely a testament to the importance of leadership in addressing this issue.
And I mean, one of the other interesting things about this, I guess, I'm not sure what we call it, is the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol or something?
I've seen a reference as such, the Kigali Amendment or the Kigali Agreement.
Okay, so let's call it the Kigali Agreement. I mean, what was rolled into that is that countries like the United States and Europe would be the first mm-hmm. to take the most aggressive action to reduce the use of these HFCs, which are, again, super greenhouse gases, and that they would do that in the near term, but that countries like India, right? Mm-hmm. India has, what is it, almost 700 million people or something, and they don't have much air conditioning yet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's going to be lots of air conditioners sold into India. And so they got this part of the agreement. They wanted to be part of it, but they wanted to have the ability for their population to have some improvement in life, quality of life, I guess. So they mm-hmm. got kind of an extension, right? They don't have to do it for another 5 or 10 years.
Yes, and there are a number of stories indicating that were it not for this sort of exception, the whole deal would have collapsed. So basically, it was one of those things where, you know, a stitch in time saves nine, so to speak.
Well, I mean, I think it speaks to this whole question of, you know, historical responsibility. Right? The U.S. and Western Europe invented this stuff. We've had air conditioners for a long time, and the rest of the world wants to catch up. But mm-hmm. it was interesting to note that I think that the, I don't know what the right word is in these international agreements, but the caucus of countries from Africa decided mm-hmm. to go with the most aggressive timetable, right, to cut out these things sooner, because they said Africans are going to get hit the hardest and the soonest, so they wanted to be on board with the most aggressive solution, right?
Exactly. That because they're on the front lines of carbon pollution, they want the most aggressive steps, which totally makes sense.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the whole thing is a tribute to the tribute to the world and to the United States and to Obama and to Secretary Kerry, but mostly to the appetite, I think, that's maybe global now to do something about climate change. Mm-hmm. But tell me, DR, there is one small fly in the ointment that has to do with this thing. And of course, it emanates from the United States, in fact, from the U.S. Senate. Of course, the Montreal Protocol was approved back when the Senate worked, and they were able to pass this kind of a treaty. There is some legal debate about whether or not this amendment, the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol, is a done deal because the parties agreed to it under the treaty, or if it has to be resubmitted to the U.S. Senate and therefore enter the limbo of Supreme Court appointees or something, right?
Yes, Desi Doyen and Brad Friedman of the Green News Report, they have noted that according to Secretary of State John Kerry and EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, they're of the view that this Kigali Amendment does not have to be submitted to the United States Senate. However, according to several environmental experts in the United States, their interpretation of this agreement is that it will likely have to be submitted to the United States Senate for ratification, and then it remains to be seen as to whether or not it will be ratified because of the number of senators who are, shall we say, frigid about doing anything to reduce emissions caused by refrigerants. Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out and what sort of, you know, debate or discussion will occur. It's interesting to note that you mentioned the issue of the Senate working. I guess there was a documentary, I think it was called Shattered Sky, that came out a couple of years ago about how the United States Senate back in the 1980s and President Reagan, you know, worked to get the Montreal Protocol passed, and basically made the point that why can't that happen today in terms of, you know, strong agreements to address carbon pollution. It'll be interesting to see what happens now, and if people who, you know, revere what happened 30 years ago will basically honor that legacy by, if in fact this has to be submitted to the United States Senate, if they decide to, in fact, ratify this. Now, I do recall it may have been the Wall Street Journal or National Review, but there was a talking point among various right-wing commentators years ago that if things were done to reduce HFCs, that would offset the need to reduce things from carbon pollution from burning fossil fuels. So it'll be interesting to see if that sort of mentality comes back up again, or if that is something that is conveniently ignored this time around.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Senate, the U.S. Senate, notwithstanding, so far 2016 has been a pretty good year for climate. I'm mm-hmm. sure we will, DR, I hope that you and I are able to put together an end-of-the-year show, but mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, clearly in 2016 we've had the formal ratification of the Paris Agreement, right, mm-hmm. which is a huge thing. Last week we talked about a treaty limiting emissions from airlines, or at mm-hmm. least a beginning. Whether or not it's like good enough teeth is unclear, but it's a step where the airlines mm-hmm. are now formally recognized their impact. We have this agreement to address the super greenhouse gases out of Kigali, which is fantastic. I mean, those three mm-hmm. things alone make 2016 a landmark year. Would you agree? Mm-hmm.
Indeed, but it's also a landmark year from a negative standpoint in that 2016 is now projected to be the third consecutive hottest year on record. We've had the hottest September on record. I believe this is like 14 or 15 straight months of the hottest consecutive months on record. And, you know, with all these great accomplishments, still The question remains, how much will this do to prevent us from facing the worst consequences? We still have so far to go in terms of, you know, curbing carbon pollution.
One of those things that you have to note, once we start talking about the Paris Agreement and in particular the airline emissions agreement, right, mm-hmm. for what it's worth, what starts to come into view on the horizon is the idea that trade agreements mm-hmm. also need to enter a regime where carbon dioxide is constrained. Right?
Exactly.
So we've got things, I think we've talked about it in the past, but many people don't know it, but we have all this global trade, agreements for global trade. But once that shipping container goes on the freighter mm-hmm. and goes off into the middle of the Pacific, the carbon dioxide generated by that ship, which is significant, is not counted in anybody's national total. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just outside the regime, right? Since we're talking about airlines, since we're talking about the Paris Agreement, since we're talking about specialty gases, the time has mm-hmm. come to think about putting, well, TPP we hope is dead, but I mean, there's going to mm-hmm. be more trade agreements in the future. We need to have carbon clearly included in those, right?
Definitely. When we talk about, you know, tipping points, you know, in the word tipping, there's a T, a P, and a P. So there you go.
Well, I think that Climate Hawks should take take a moment to think about how much good has happened this past week in Kigali and the things that are going in the right direction. What we'll do is we'll put up links to most of what we've talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. Check us out there. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Please share us with your friends so they can listen to us as well. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on iTunes. So there you go. There's all the ways you can find us. Mm-hmm. We'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.